This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. May is Better Hearing and Speech Month. I have in the studio with me two members from the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing to talk about the importance of language and literacy development for children with special needs. Dr. Wong Zi-Peng is an assistant professor in special education needs, and joining her is Kate Balsamo, a speech language pathologist working in a private school. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Zi-Peng, maybe I can start with you. Tell me about this association. The acronym is MASH, it's pronounced MASH. Mm-hmm. What prompted its founding, and tell me some of the work it does?
MASH stands for Malaysian Association for Speech, Language and Hearing. It is a professional body governing the speech language pathologies and the audiologists in the country. So the professions of speech-language pathologist and audiologist in Malaysia was first introduced in the 1960s. There were very few of us then, less than 10. And these speech-language pathologists and audiologists felt the need to network. But it wasn't till 1995 that MASH was officially registered with the ROS. And MASH started with just 6 members back then. Yeah, so MASH has developed over the years with members working in different sectors, members working with the Ministry of Health, with the Ministry of Education, members working as private practitioners and with private institutions in the country.
So 6 members from more than 40, 50 years ago. How many members does it have today?
Well, in the country right now, we have about 300 speech-language pathologists. Not all of them are registered as MASH members. We have different associations right now in the country.
Okay, yeah. Kate, what does a speech-language pathologist do?
So I work in the schoolhouse, and in the schoolhouse, speech-language pathologists are working directly with students on a multitude of areas. So they're working on articulation, which would be speech-sound difficulties, language support, so that encompasses both receptive language, language understanding, and expressive language. We also support children if they're having difficulty getting their words out. So that would be with children who might be stuttering and children who have difficulty with vocal control. So a hoarse voice or a nasal voice, working to support children in that capacity. Mm. In addition to supporting children directly, we also, in a schoolhouse, do a lot of early intervention support. So that would be working with the 3, 4, and 5-year-old population on early language skills and supporting teachers as well with collaborative strategies and consulting with them to support the kids.
Right. Children who need therapy like this, are they struggling with learning? Are they going through a disorder? Is that the right language to use?
Well, language does affect learning, because you need to have language to understand what's happening and then language to be able to express to teachers what you know. So in the schoolhouse, I am helping teachers discern who might require support. And some parents seek support outside services from a speech pathologist and get assessed in that capacity and then bring reports back into the schoolhouse.
Zi-Peng, it's called the Better Hearing and Speech Month. What is maybe the key message or highlight that you like to? Are there common misconceptions that you'd like to clear up about what challenges students face in schools?
Mm-hmm. So the Better Hearing and Speech Month is one that speech-language pathologists and audiologists worldwide celebrate in May, every May. And this is the time where we get together our efforts in raising awareness in speech-language hearing, communication, or even swallowing difficulties. And this is also the time you get to provide public education to local communities to help them to know what they could do if they knew someone with such an issue and how they could support these individuals. So for today's session, what we would like to highlight is the issues that school children face at school.
What are some of these challenges?
Well, if children are having difficulty with language, it's going to affect all of their academics. So reading, let's start there. When you're reading, you have to be able to decode the words and pronounce the words. So if you're difficulty with articulation, you might not be pronouncing the words correctly. So when you say them, you're not encoding them accurately. With reading, we get into reading comprehension. So you have to be able to remember the information and recall it to answer questions. You need the vocabulary to do that. You need the grammar structures to be able to explain your thoughts. So from a reading standpoint, speech and language difficulties are affecting a child. Writing as well. They need to be able to organize their thoughts and ideas and put it on paper. And again, if they have difficulty with vocabulary and grammar, thought organization and sequencing, all of those are affected. But it's not just reading and writing. We get into math. Mm-hmm. Language will affect math. With math, children have to understand vocabulary of math. The multiple meaning, if you have to add plus some, could all mean the same thing. So children have to be able to understand that. They have to be able to follow directions when they're doing their math. So it's affecting reading, writing, math, and then their ability in the classroom environment to follow directions. Right. Teachers give lots of directions all the time that are not just single step. They get into multiple step directions. The directions have lots of concepts in them. If children have difficulty understanding those concepts, they won't act upon those spoken directions, which could lead to difficulty for them in the classroom.
Mm. This sounds like both a mental as well as a biological or physical challenge, because you mentioned zipping, swallowing, in addition to having to understand the language. Is this both a mental and physical process?
I think speech and language encompasses so many avenues. So when Zipeng is talking about swallowing, we're looking more at children who have difficulty eating certain consistencies of food. Maybe the oral musculature needs to get strengthened due to a bigger condition that child may be facing. And for that child, if they have difficulty with their oral musculature, their speech sounds will be affected. If that's the case, not necessarily do those children have reading, writing, math problems, because their language system is intact. It's just their ability to effectively communicate. Mm. So that's the one with the swallowing. With the fluency, the stuttering, again, that's just the effective communication difficulty. A child who's stuttering isn't going to have academic problems necessarily if their language system is intact. So it really comes down when the child has language difficulties, then it affects the academics. Mm. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Zibing, how do you tell then, is a child struggling academically because they're not grasping the concept, or because they need additional support in this sense?
So a speech-language pathologist, when first seeing a child, will be doing assessment to see, to look at the specific areas in language. Is it the way the child is using vocabulary? Is there a difficulty in understanding instructions? Is there a difficulty in processing information or putting together words to form sentences, or putting or a difficulty in expressing ideas? So these are the things that a speech-language pathologist will be assessing. And if needed, the speech-language pathologist will then make a diagnosis with regard to the language or the speech or the communication difficulty. And from there, intervention can be planned.
Mm. Is the availability or awareness of intervention in schools widely available and known?
I think it depends on the school we're talking about, so, and the level of comfort that the school has in general supporting children with needs, and then more specifically, the knowledge and skills of the classroom teacher and the support staff working with that child. So the idea, the concept of differentiation, where you can have an activity that the teacher is presenting to the class, but there's different ways it could either be, the content could be differentiated, what's being delivered, the delivery manner could be differentiated, the product the child is requiring to produce can be differentiated, the actual learning classroom can be differentiated. And by differentiate, I mean you're looking at different avenues for the way the child can learn the information and convey the information to the teacher to get to the end product. So the way you go about maybe completing an assignment by writing, I might record my answer instead, and you know, Zipeng might draw out a diagram. Mm. But all three of us are still working towards the end product the teacher wanted in different ways.
Right.
So I think the schools are on that path to learn those strategies to support kids.
And this would be an inclusive classroom where we all learn in the same classroom.
Correct.
Right. And are we seeing that a lot now? Is that the exception or the norm, Zi Ping?
I think it's emerging in the country. So the Ministry of Education had come up with guidelines for inclusive practices, guidelines to help teachers to be flexible with the curriculum. But in my opinion, these guidelines need to be further developed so that the guidelines are more comprehensive and teachers get specific training on how to differentiate. And it's not just saying go and differentiate.
When we were talking about trying to do this show and raise awareness, you wanted to stress this point that literacy development is to move beyond socialization and daily life skills, especially for children who have these special needs. Can I get you to elaborate on that point?
Mm-hmm.
And this, because this is the current model, is it the dominant model that we have now?
It's the way people perceive what students with special educational needs should be getting. So there is a misconception that if you have additional needs and if you fall into the moderate or severe range of disability, then probably language or literacy wouldn't be what you need first. You build up your social skills, build up your functional living skills so that you can be independent. But I think what a lot of people are missing right now is that literacy skills are very much embedded in functional skills. We need to be able to read not necessarily complex text, but basic text, like just reading labels, as we move on with our daily lives. And research over the decades have also shown that individuals with special needs can actually learn how to read and write. Right, write doesn't have to be writing using a pencil. It can be using technology, for instance. But we need to help them to access that mechanism and that way of learning. So right now, it's not so much of whether they can or they can't read and write. It's whether we know how to teach them how to read and how to write, how to express themselves through text.
And Kate, where does the speech language pathologist fit into this model? Like, do you assist the teacher, or would it be a separate session or space that you'd be aiding the students in with their classroom assignments and homework?
Currently where I am in the schoolhouse, it's a combination of both. So sometimes I am pushing into the classroom and supporting the child in class to access the material and information that they need. And sometimes I'm pulling the students out in either individual or small group to build the skills required to access the curriculum when they come back in. I think the key is as schools are becoming more inclusive, they're not only looking at how they're teaching students, but also looking at their overall curriculum for the students, and that not everyone has to follow the same path. It can be modified a little bit along the way. And that is something I'm helping collaborate with teachers to talk about. What are the access points that the child could access the information, and ensuring that they have the basic literacy skills to achieve that?
Yeah. I imagine the interaction goes with the student as well as with the teachers for you in the classroom, isn't it? The communication with the teacher is as important as your communication with the student who needs
help. Oh, absolutely. Because when I do come and push into the classroom, I'm only there for a short amount of time, and the classroom teacher is there for a much longer period of time with that student. So whenever I'm working with the student, or sometimes we're co-teaching together, I'm always modeling what I would want the teacher to continue doing for the rest of the week. I leave posters behind, supports behind, so the teacher can continue what I'm starting at the beginning of the week for the rest of the week.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Wong Zi Ping and Kate Balsamo from the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing. We'll talk more about schooling options for children with special needs after this short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. My guests today are Dr. Wong Zi Ping and Kate Balsamo. Both are speech language pathologists and members of the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing. We're discussing the importance of literacy development for students with special needs. Students with special needs, do we need to more clearly define what are those special needs?
So, Zi Peng and I had a side conversation about when a child has a label or a diagnosis, and that So when you're looking at special needs, it encompasses so many different facets. We can have an actual diagnosis like autism, Down syndrome, ADHD. You could have a mild to severe speech and language difficulty, so effectively communicating. You can just have a speech sound articulation disorder. So I think special needs encompasses so many different disorder types and profiles of children. Maybe for today's conversation, if we're looking at children in a schoolhouse, that is a wide variety of children as well. So,
Does it cover learning difficulties? Kids on the autism spectrum, for example?
That would, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So whenever there's a speech and language difficulty from a language facet, then there's, like I said earlier, there's a learning difficulty, and that all comes back to learning in the classroom.
Yeah. Zibing, would you have a rough idea of the number of students who have some form of speech or language disorder type?
So this is what was reported by the Social Welfare Department in 2016. Altogether, including individuals who aren't at school, in 2016, there were about 400,000 individuals registered as having a disability. Out of these 400,000 individuals, 35% of them have a learning difficulty, and 4.7% of them were identified as having a speech difficulty. If you look at what was reported by the American Speech and Language Association in 2015, the statistics of oral speech difficulty wasn't that different from what they reported. So in the US in 2015, there were about 5% of students identified as having speech difficulties.
Would that mean that for every 100 kids, there would be 5 who require some support in terms of speech-language therapy?
I'm trying to do the math in my head. I think so. Mm-hmm. I'm a speech pathologist, not a mathematician.
Yeah. So how many speech pathologists would a school require then to cope with this need?
My understanding is that every school should have a speech pathologist on staff, or at least access to. So if it's not feasible for a school to have a speech pathologist on staff, maybe that speech pathologist could have a couple schools that they rotate around to. But the goggles and the language framing that we bring to the table is just critical in a schoolhouse. So I think that every school should have access to at least one speech pathologist.
At least one. And Zibing, do we have that at least in public schools?
No, we don't right now. There are only 300 speech-language pathologists in the country, as I mentioned, and only 2% of them work with the Ministry of Education. That means we have only about 6 of them in the entire country working with the Ministry of Education.
Right. And would you know how they are assigned or where they are based?
They are currently with the Special Education Department.
Okay.
With the Ministry of Education, and with this little number, they don't get to go and service schools like what speech-language pathologists in other countries get to do. So a lot of them, at least very few of them, would get these students. Well, they would go to schools, but not that often, but they would also get students to go to satellite centres that the Special Education Department operate and provide services from there.
Mm. So I imagine many, many parents would have to seek outside support if they would like to enrol their kids in for some kind of therapy. Kate, is this an expensive endeavor to sign your kids up for additional support?
Well, it's definitely a financial burden on families. And so the school I'm working at is lucky enough to have me on staff. So sometimes families come to us and they're already seeing a private speech pathologist. And then when they get here, they ask, how much does it cost to have you too? And I'll say, you know, I'm part of the school, so you don't require additional services. I can't speak for Malaysia. Looking at the United States, on average right now, it's $100 for an hour to have speech pathology services.
Right. That's the general. And Zibing, what's the rate in Malaysia?
To see a private speech and language pathologist, it's at least 100 ringgit mm-hmm. for about 45 minutes. The rate depends on the location. So it's more expensive here in Kuala Lumpur than in, say, another state like Malacca.
Mm-hmm. Currently, for parents in schools, what are their options? Like, with only six speech language pathologists working for the Ministry of Education, does that mean they are mostly concentrated around the special schools, as you mentioned earlier?
They are involved in screening students whom school suspect have a speech, language or communication difficulty, in providing assessment, and as I said, also in providing intervention as much as they could. But parents who do not have access to speech and language pathologists in schools could seek help from hospitals around the country. So the Ministry of Health provides speech-language therapy as an outpatient service to individuals who need that.
So these are numbers that I saw from the education blueprint that was released back in 2013, that we have three types of schools. One is an inclusive one, which is what we want, and that's in 2013, it's 6%. And then there is the integrated model, which is 89%. And then there is this category called special education schools, which is 5%. Are these broadly currently also the schooling options for kids with some form of communication disorder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Has the ratio improved since then, that we have more inclusive schools?
Well, the current understanding of inclusive education within the Ministry of Education is mainstream schools. So if a child can cope in a mainstream school, then that is inclusive for the child.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And of course, some schools would have special educational needs teacher working together with mainstream school teachers. But inclusive education is actually more than that. It's more than just placement.
Mm-hmm.
It's about supporting the child to access learning in school.
Yeah.
And my belief is inclusive education needs to be a school-wide culture. The whole school needs to embrace that concept, not just the child with special needs, but the neurotypical peers, the teachers, the administrators, the building supervisors. And then within the school, there needs to be systems in place that help to identify children and provide those interventions that Zipeng is talking about. Mm. And with that, you need teachers and teacher assistants that are trained to be able to differentiate the curriculum. So it's really a bigger picture inclusion, not just the child physically in the schoolhouse being included. It's a mindset shift.
Yeah, because even if you're included in a mainstream school, your peers might not interact with you a lot. You might be separated during recess or for a special math class. Zipeng, are teachers ready for that kind of differentiated model, that differentiated instruction model, as Kate mentioned, in Malaysia? Are we training our teachers towards that direction?
The Ministry of Education is beginning to do this. So at the IPGs, Teacher Training Institutes, they are now making all teachers or all pre-service teachers take or learn about special educational needs. So there are steps taken to support inclusive education at schools, at public schools in the country. The policies that have been implemented also support the implementation of inclusive education. But in my opinion, the policies have been rolled out much sooner than what the education system could cope at the moment. So we have teachers, experienced teachers, who have not gotten the kind of training and awareness. And we have got new teachers who are just beginning to get that kind of training. So I think people see the needs. When I talk to teachers, they're always keen to support inclusive education or to support students with special educational needs in their classroom. But then the question always comes back to how do I do this? So the support, I think, needs to be more than just training, like what Kate said. It has to be implemented school-wide. So there should be policies that support the implementation of inclusive education school-wide. So support from all levels from the community.
And it's nice to hear that in Malaysia, the teacher training programs are encouraging teachers to take a special needs class. But like Si Peng said, we have teachers that have been teaching 20 years and aren't going anywhere for 20 more. So they also need that education. So also important is ongoing professional development. And luckily, I've been in Malaysia now 7 years, and I'm seeing more and more opportunities to access affordable professional development in the area of special education. So it's nice to see that there are avenues. And one way to connect with that is the Special Education Network in Malaysia, so the acronym SENEM. They're always posting information about accessible professional development for teachers, families, and therapists.
Has MESH played a role in getting this process up and running?
MESH would like to. Mm-hmm. Right now, because there's so few representatives in schools, MESH doesn't get a loud voice or a strong voice to advocate for students with special educational needs in schools. But what we would like the ministry to see is that speech-language pathologists can play a role in supporting inclusive education. Currently, speech-language pathologists are only hired by the Ministry of Education if they have also got an additional teacher training diploma or a teacher qualification.
Right.
Which may not be possible right now because there are so few of us, and speech-language pathologies get hired very easily, so it's competitive.
The ministry wants existing teachers to level up and become speech-language pathologists in general. Is that what you're saying?
That was the ministry's initiative at one point of time. Right now, any speech-language pathologist who wants to work with the ministry will have to get an additional diploma.
So dual certification.
A teacher and a pathologist.
Right. Which is actually not needed because we can still work together and play different roles, overlapping but different roles.
Right, because the teacher is teaching the content to the children. That's not the role of, or I see the role as a speech pathologist. The speech pathologist is trying to help the child access the content and looking at systems and supports and strategies to get the content. So the classroom teacher is the content teacher. We're looking at access points to help the student with accessibility.
Is there a possibility for a private public partnership? I mean, how does the US does it, or any international example that where we can maybe fill the gap that, you know, the school system is trying to close in the meantime?
I can talk to both systems. So in the United States, there is a speech pathologist per school, pretty much. And if there's not, we can contract with private speech pathologists to come in to ensure that a school has a speech pathologist. The school I'm working at is an international school, and they have me on staff. But there's quite a few international schools around KL that do not have a speech pathologist on staff. However, they, too, contract with the speech pathology, either a independent person, or there's different organizations, multidisciplinary clinics, for example, that have speech pathologists on staff, and they could contract with them to come into their schoolhouses. Mm-hmm. So maybe public schools in Malaysia could look to do the same over the years.
And I think the Ministry of Education can also work very closely with universities that train speech and language pathologies to make sure that the needs of any school, an understanding of how the school works, will be part of the training syllabus. So that will close the gap much faster than getting a speech-language pathologist to get another certificate.
For parents in a public school right now, while we're trying to close the gap, what avenues do they have if, you know, they don't have access, immediate access to a speech-language pathologist?
So there are different avenues for them. Like I've mentioned earlier, there are hospitals that provide services for children as outpatient services. There are private speech-language pathologists who work either on their own or with private institutions like hospitals again. There are speech-language pathologists who work with NGOs like early intervention centers or rehabilitation centers.
And that seems like a daunting task for a family to say, you know, where do I go now? Yeah. But I go back to SNEM. That was our mission 7 years ago, was to connect all of the clinics and organizations and NGOs. Because if you're living on one side of town in KL and Ampang and you don't know what's happening over in Damansara, but there could be a great clinic over there that your child could be accessing. So encouraging families to reach out for those resources, looking on websites to try to figure out what is available to the family.
And finally, maybe I can get you to leave a final message. What message would you like to leave on this Better Hearing and Speech Month? Deeping, I'll start with you.
I think it's very important that students with speech, language, or communication difficulties are well supported in schools, and they are not defined by the disorder, but more appreciated for what they can bring and what they can learn at schools.
Where can people go to maybe get in touch with yourself, Kate, or Mesh?
Mm-hmm. On the Mesh's website, we have a directory of professionals, qualified speech-language pathologists and audiologists who are currently working at the country. So you can access this information through www.mesh.org.my. And in this month, we have also set up a Facebook page with information about all activities that Mesh members are currently doing throughout the month of May. And in this month, members from different areas of the country are providing free screenings, so free quick assessments for individuals who need speech and language assessments or hearing assessments, and they can view all these different locations for the free screening at www.facebook.com/mesh.org.my.
We'll include the address in our podcast description as well. Kate?
I'm going to reach out to parents and ask parents to be their child's strongest advocate, to ask those questions, push for their child. Don't be afraid to question the pediatrician or the teacher, because in the end, you're looking out for the best interest of your child. And at the same time, being an advocate means that you're also playing a role in the development of your child's speech and language. So disconnecting so you can connect. So putting down the device and spending time reading to your child, playing with your child, talking about daily routines, labeling the world around them. So advocating for them when they're outside of your home and being an advocate for them when they're inside of your home, again, by disconnecting and connecting with the family.
How important is the time factor here? Because Zibing was mentioning how there is a dearth of qualified speech-language pathologists in public schools. For those who have unfortunately slipped through the cracks, is it ever too late to come back for therapy? Adults, for example, who still have some of those communication challenges?
No, it's never too late. I've met families who have adults with autism that have come in and met with us to discuss options for their son or daughter who are now 25, 30 years old to communicate, looking for functional opportunities for the young adult in the community. So it's never too late to seek out services and support.
Kate Zibing, thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you.
If you missed any part of this interview, you can download the podcast via our BFM app, available through Google Play and the App Store. Thank you for listening, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.